Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
From the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, Missouri, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson. Arlen Suderman of FC Stone will join us as well. He'll discuss cash basis levels from now until the end of the year and his expectations, in particular for the corn market. You'll want to stick around for that one. We'll also take up cash rents and a brand new formula that Gary Schnitke, U of I Extension agricultural economist, has just posted to the Farm Doc Daily website to figure cash rents on your individual fields based on the PI, or the Productivity Index. As we close out our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast, too, that with Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the settlement prices as they finished up in Chicago. December corn today at $3.48 and a quarter, half of a cent higher. The March up a quarter at $3.61 and a quarter. May at $3.69 and three quarters unchanged. July $3.77 and a half, a quarter higher. December of next year a quarter cent higher at $3.93 and three quarters. November beans at $9.88 up to January $9.98 and a half, two and a half higher. March soybeans at $10.09 up three in the May at $10.18 up two and three quarters. Next year's November at $10.08 and a quarter, 4 cents higher. Bean oil at $35.37, 35 cents higher. Bean meal down at 30 cents at $3.15.20. Soft red winter wheat December contract, half of a cent lower at $4.26 and three quarters. The July harvest month there at $4.69 and a half, down a penny and a half. And the hard red July at $4.74, finished unchanged for the day. Live cattle futures December contract, 122.92 and a half, down a buck 70. February down $1.80 at 128.57 and a half. The feeder cattle in the Novies at 157.32 and a half, $2.55 lower. January at 156.90, down $3.62 and a half cents. And lean hogs for the day, December contract, $63.55, down 37 and a half cents. February down $1.12 and a half. They finished at $69.75 for 100 pounds. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming, not long and sometimes even before we post it on our radio stations. The other thing you can pick up there are your tickets to the Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up the 21st day of November, not very far away now, the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving in Normal, Illinois. If you haven't bought your tickets yet, do it today. Don't wait. Get these tickets now because we have a fantastic program scheduled for you. We'll have seven commodity analysts there, including our own Todd Hubbs from the University of Illinois, to take a look at the marketplace. A whole bunch of other names you'll recognize as well. Farm Assets. AssetsConference.com, willag.org, or 800-898-1065. Gary Schnitke, who you'll hear a bit later in this program, will be on hand with us. He's going to take a look at conservation management, things like cover crops and no-till, and even regular conventional tillage passages, and how that works into your farming operation economically. So what are the difference on the 50,000 acres that they have studied over the last couple of years, what works and what doesn't? Should be a great day. Again, the Farm Assets Conference is the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving. That's the 21st day of November in Normal, Illinois. You've got to schedule yourself to be there. The cost is just $35. FarmAssetsConference.com, willag.org, or 800-898-1065. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. Mostly clear skies, a low of 29 tonight. Calm winds out of the southwest at about 6 miles an hour. That'll come after midnight. And then tomorrow, sunny skies, a high of 48. Friday, sunny with a high of, just get this, 36 degrees. North-northeast winds at 6 to 8 miles an hour.
Support for WILL comes from Busey, giving more than $1 million and countless volunteer hours annually to make a positive difference in our communities. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you today from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, Missouri. Don't forget to sign up and get your tickets right now for the Farm Assets Conference. That's in Normal, Illinois. It's less than 2 weeks away. Get your tickets today, $35, willag.org, farmassetsconference.com, or 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson is now on the line with us to take a look at what's been happening in the marketplace. There's news out of southern Illinois today on the Ohio River. Jackie, can you tell me about what this means for the commodity markets or basis levels in those areas? The Ohio River, I guess, is shut down because of rainfall.
Again. Yes, Todd. You know, this is the third time that they've had to shut down this section of the Ohio River. This, in the last 2 months, is by Paducah, Kentucky, is where it is. It's Lock and Dam 52. And so, you know, right now at a time when we don't need freight rates to go higher, they're rising. They went up to a 1.5 week high, and basis is continuing to widen even as we, you know, move forward with harvest. We're behind on corn, of course. And so this is not good news. We've struggled with this all through this season, it seems like, and it's just another setback, basically. Farmers in that area certainly have to pay attention, and you know, and when that shuts down, it backs everything up from there to the north. And so this makes for a very difficult situation while guys are struggling out there to try and finish up.
What are we hearing about corn yields as it relates to some of the high winds we've had, some of the other kinds of things in the weather that has been making the news the last couple of weeks?
Well, I tell you what, it's been very interesting. In fact, you know, most people, when we go through the USDA report expectations in just a little bit, you'll see, you know, everybody's expecting to see the yields for corn go higher. And you know, and I guess I can't argue with that necessarily, seeing former came out at 173.8. But, you know, we're hearing that this high wind incident that hit the Corn Belt took in some places 20 to 30 bushels off corn yield. And in comparison to what high moisture corn yields had indicated at a dry level, it's primarily lodging and cob loss. You know, it's unlikely, though, Todd, that it's going to show up in this November report at all. In fact, it probably will first be reflected when we get to the January annual report.
And speaking of the November report, it's due out at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, of course. Folks can see those numbers as they come out on our website. I'll post our Twitter account there. If they want to follow me directly, it's at Commodity Week, so they can get the numbers as they're released from the United States Department of Agriculture. What are you thinking about that report and the kinds of things that it will show? You've already mentioned the Informa numbers.
Right. I mean, when you look at the average guesses that are coming out of the analysts, yield or production at 14.3 for corn, you know, slightly higher than we saw last month. Yield at 172.4. And again, another lower harvested acre yield. So, you know, that's the interesting part. The minute that you drop harvested acres, yield would normally go up because you're losing the worst acres, basically. So it doesn't dramatically impact production. On beans, 4.4 billion bushels, 49.3 harvested acres, higher again, which means, you know, we were at 49.5 on last month's report. A drop in that certainly is indicated as far as that goes, because here we have higher harvested acres. And so it's going to be interesting to see once what the USDA really comes out with. You know, I've been around them long enough to know that they basically don't take any guessing. You know, it's not a guessing game. It's what they get told by farmers, and it's what they see out in the fields. And so, you know, ending stocks too, because of the corn yield being higher, the expectation higher, we're seeing ending stocks looking like they're going to go to 2.366 versus 2.34. Last month, but both beans and wheat are expected to drop from last month. They expect 420 versus 430, and on wheat, 957 versus 960, so a very minimal drop there. And when you look at the world-ending stocks, that's one that I think is interesting, too. A little higher on the corn side of things, again, you know, kind of following the same pattern as we're looking at here in the U.S., and then beans lower and wheat slightly lower. And so, you know, if the report comes in close to what the expectations are, it's probably going to be kind of a non-report. You might see with a higher yield, you could possibly see a lower corn trade at the very beginning. And then as the day goes on, more reality sets in and they begin to actually push the numbers. But otherwise, it could be a pretty boring report. Let's just put it that way.
That's one set of fundamentals that we'll know about tomorrow. The other thing we've been watching fairly closely and will all winter long is weather in South America. Where do they stand in Brazil and Argentina today?
Well, I'll tell you what, the weather in Brazil certainly is less than ideal. You know, we keep hearing about La Nina, although the La Nina that's there is extremely weak, and they expect it to disappear in January, February. In fact, it's such an odd La Nina this time that they don't think it's even going to impact the weather the way it normally does. When you see a La Nina down there, you usually see poorer weather in the southern part, in other words, northern Argentina and southern Brazil, and very normal weather in central and northern Brazil. And it doesn't appear to be that way at all this year, you know. So the most important weather, of course, on beans itself is ahead of them, you know, when they're potting and everything else. But, you know, it's still very unsettled and very worrisome. You just don't know. We know Mato Grosso has to get those beans in the ground before December 31st. Otherwise, their costs just keep on going higher and higher because of rust.
Hey, one other final question for you. This one has to do with biodiesel as it's related to Argentina. It looks like they're trying to enter the U.S. market. Is that right?
That is correct. I thought that was extremely interesting that President Marseille came out and said, you know, that they're willing to accept the 15% levy as well as a quota as to how much that they can ship to the U.S. just to try and gain entry into the U.S.'s market itself. And so again, you know, this is going to continue to go on. We're going to continue to see people trying to come in, just like we're trying to go into their markets all the way. One thing I forgot to mention, Todd, when we were talking about Brazil, is that they have had their first case of rust, and they're showing up on volunteer beans, which it really isn't unusual. But the thing that's scary is there's a big concern that the disease, you know, it's developed a resistance to the traditional fungicides. And so the number of fungicides that are now working against rust down in Brazil is becoming less and less and less. And so this could be another complication that they have as we go forward if this weather doesn't straighten itself out.
Hey, Jackie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great time at the meeting.
I will. In fact, that is Jackie Vank. She's with Stuart Peterson, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnitke is here. He's penned another article for the Farm Doc Daily website. This one offers up a formula that will calculate your individual field's cash rent based off of a couple of items from the United States Department of Agriculture. So this really is a formula, Gary, that you put together that explains some of the variability in cash rent based off USDA's numbers and then allows for an adjustment for your local conditions based off of what, the productivity index of the field or something called the PAI, right?
Yeah, so what the point of this formula is that we do know what average cash rents are in a county, but there's a lot of variability in a county, and it varies a lot based on productivity of the soils, and we measure that with the productivity of the soils, or the PI index. So we put a little formula together that would give you a benchmark rent, which would be get you close to the average for a particular farm with a particular PI. So this allows people to look at their farm's PI and say, in 2017, the average cash rent for that farm would have been whatever it was. So that's the point of the formula.
Well, let's go through the formula. So it starts with the PI. Some will know what the productivity index on their farm might be. Others will need to find or calculate it. And there's a pretty simple way to do that in the state of Illinois, other places around the nation as well. It's by using acre value. This is a website by Granular.
Yes, that's correct. And what we find is that the higher the PI, and PI indexes in Illinois will range from in the 140s down to the 80s. As you get up in a higher productivity index, you get you generally have a more productive soil and higher yields. So we would expect the cash rent to increase with higher productivity indexes. And you find that productivity index using acre, you can use it using acre value. Locate your farm on a on the acre value, and they will give you the soil types on that farm and the PI.
And then the CRD, this is the crop reporting district from the United States Department of Agriculture, and there's an adjustment there. How'd you figure the adjustment, or is that something that comes along with the crop reporting district? And folks can figure out where that is in the state of Illinois in the Farm Doc Daily article, but they can certainly look it up.
Yeah, so what we did was we fit a relationship between county cash rents, PIs, and explained those with PIs and the CRD that the farm was located in. And we see variations in rents across the state depending on what crop reporting district you were located in. And you know, the competitive pressures, the weather and other things can vary across the state. So we found those fitting a relationship to the county yields and the PI. But just to give you an example, if you're in East Central Illinois, in the East Central Eastern CRD, the CRD index is 26, which means you take your PI, multiply it by 2.79, subtract 147, and add 29 to it, and that'll give you an average cash rent for that parcel.
Okay, so let me go through the formula real quickly with you. Most people can find the map, and you've got a link on the Farm Doc Daily website, to the average cash rent for their county. And you say that that average cash rent from USDA is explained mostly 91%, I think, through a regression that you did by the PI and the CRD. The formula then is the USDA's cash rent is equal to a negative 147. Where'd that number come from?
That just came from the regression analysis, and it's just makes it's just, we're fitting a straight line through the cash rents, and if you look at where that goes through, if you had a zero cash rent, it would be minus, or a zero PI, it would be minus 147. There's no such thing as a zero PI, but that's where it would be if you took the line all the way there.
So the formula then again is, if you were figuring it, how USDA came up with its cash rent, or the formula that you fit to that is, USDA's average cash rent for the county is equal to negative 47 plus 2.79 times the PI. Where'd the 2.79 come from?
That was from the regression analysis as well. That's just the coefficients on the line that goes through the PIs.
And then plus the CRD adjustment, which we already talked about, but this is a geographic adjustment that allows for consumption patterns in an area to increase or decrease the cash rent by a set amount, say 27, it's worth $27 more or $36 more or something along those lines, correct?
Yep.
So I'm going to say this again because everybody's trying to write down the formula, but they can go to the Farm Doc Daily website and find it. So if you're figuring, if you're fitting the formula to the USDA's cash rent, it's USDA's cash rent is equal to negative 147 plus 2.79 times the PI plus the CRD adjustment. And if you want to figure your own field, you replace the PI in that. So that gives you the PI, but you replace the PI in that with your own field's PI, and that'll give you what the cash rent on that field should be in that county.
That's correct.
What else do we need to know about the formula? Anything?
So the formula is there. The one thing I would say add to that is that if you calculate your benchmark rent and your actual rent is near that or above it, you're likely to have your farmer, or if you're the landowner and you do that, you're likely to have the farmer asking for a lower cash rent this year, and that's just because of where we're at on return wise. And if we're looking at mid $3 corn and mid $9 soybeans, we have to see some lower cash rents to make cash renting farmland profitable.
Gary, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Well, we're here in Kansas City at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. Arlen Suderman from FC Stone now joins us in your stomping grounds here, but I want to talk about Kansas City. We probably ought to discuss what your thoughts are on tomorrow's USDA report when you think about farmers and their ability to take advantage of the marketplace. First, lay out what you expect.
Well, this is the last real adjustment to production that we get from USDA before the January report. USDA usually doesn't like to do much on the production side in December. And so once we get past this November report, the trade's going to assume that we pretty much know the size of the crop. The expectation is, and what's been priced in, is that the soybean crop probably gets a little bit smaller. How much could have an impact, because with the acreage we have on soybeans, a bushel swing makes a big difference on the bottom line. On corn, it's generally expected big crops get bigger, and this crop is expected to be up in the 172, maybe even 173 range. So much bigger than what we ever would have dreamed a couple of months back with the conditions that we're facing then. So it's a big supply. Then we can start looking at the demand side of the equation. I don't expect USDA to make any big adjustments on the demand side, but that's what we're going to be watching carefully.
I have a different sort of question for you. Now that you've been with FC Stone for a while, what information do you see today that helps you out that you didn't know existed in the past?
Well, I think my experience at FC Stone has really helped me get closer to the cash market, not just at the farmer level where I'd worked so many years, but what's behind that. All the levels all the way to the end user, and thinking more like the end user thinks and how that eventually impacts the price that the farmer is going to get. So I've gained a much deeper understanding, I think, and continue. Every day when I learn something, I learn how much I don't know.
Okay, so given that, let's talk a little bit about basis and the next 2 months, because farmers will need to think about maybe some of their tax indications and may need to market. They may want to market just after January 1 because they're looking at needing to pay some bills.
Yeah, if you think about the corn market, yeah, we have a big crop here, and typically we'd see then a lot of carry built into the market and very weak basis. But the farmer's not happy at the flat price at all, and I can understand that. And so he has no interest in selling. He's basically selling his soybeans to keep his checkbook balanced, to pay the bills, and we call it checkbook marketing. And so the corn, we need another 270, 275 million bushels per week to go through the supply pipeline in order to keep it flowing with the demand we have out there, mostly most of that strength on the domestic side. And so we need to be pulling corn, and the farmer doesn't want to sell. So the basis market is already starting to firm up in some locations. We're anticipating that the basis and the spreads are going to have to do the work to pull that grain away from the farmer if we don't have anything to give us a flat price, you know, a board rally, I guess I should say. Any type of board rally would probably have to come from a weather scare in South America.
And on the soy side?
On the soy side, particularly the first half of the marketing year is where the demand is really there. That's where the bias of the demand is. Now, because the farmer is selling soybeans to meet his cash flow needs, we're seeing it come through the system a little bit more. And so we're not seeing quite the response. Some locations where they finished up and locked the door, we're starting to see that basis firm. So we will see some of it. The deeper we get into winter, though, and we get past those supplies, that's when the basis and the spreads are going to have to pull it from the farmer once again.
Thanks so much, Arlen.
Thank you.
Arlen Suderman is with FC Stone.
It's National Harvey Wallbanger Day. It's also St. Castris, Patron of Cattle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1789, Elijah Craig, according to some historians, distilled the first bourbon whiskey from corn in Bourbon County, Kentucky. What's not in dispute is that Craig founded a distillery as well as building Kentucky's first cloth manufacturing mill, its first paper mill, and its first mill for manufacturing rope from hemp. In 1880, Edwin Drake died, an American driller. He discovered the first productive oil well near Titusville, Pennsylvania, that launched the modern U.S. petroleum industry. He struck oil at a depth of 69 feet on August 27th of 1859. Drake used an old steam engine to power the drill. Ironically, Drake died in poverty after years of crippling illnesses. In 1910, a patent for the first electric insect zapper was issued to William H. Frost of Spokane, Washington. The invention used a number of electronically charged parallel wires. In 1923, Jack Colby was born. An American electrical engineer, he invented the first integrated circuit, for which he shared the 2000 Nobel Prize in Physics. And in 1974, London's famous flower and vegetable market moved from Covent Gardens. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Whether you're looking to buy, build, or refinance, Busey will guide you through the home buying process. Busey, your dream, our promise.
This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. Drew Lerner now here from World Weather Incorporated. I'm in your neck of the woods this week. It's kind of cool here in Kansas City, Drew. Tell me about the weather forecast, please.
Well, you know, it may be cool, but at least the sunshine is out today. It's a beautiful day. It's just crisp, that's all. And it looks like we have a large part of hard red winter wheat country that's going to continue to be dry for the next 10 days. And that's okay for this time of the year, with one exception possibly, and that's southwestern Kansas and a few areas in eastern Colorado where we really didn't do well with precipitation during the autumn planting season. It is not critically dry there, but we do need some moisture in order to get the crop better established before we get into the bitter cold days of winter. For the Midwest, I really think we're going to see a good opportunity for fieldwork to advance in many locations. However, there is going to be a little bit of an issue in Ohio and Indiana, where we received some significant rainfall this past weekend, 1 to 3 inch plus amounts of rain. And with temperatures dropping into the teens and 20s for low temperatures coming up this before the week is out, we're probably going to end up with a very slow drying rate across Ohio. I'm not expecting teens in Ohio, but I am expecting to see the afternoon temperatures struggle to get over the 45-degree mark for a while. So it will be a slow drying process, and because of that, we will see delays. Now, the Delta in the southeast will see some showers today and tomorrow, and then after that, we'll probably see some drier weather, but there's still disturbances coming up for a while. So we'll watch the U.S. It's probably going to be all right. I don't think anybody's going to have prolonged delays except for that region in Ohio that I mentioned before.
Yes, and that brings me to the Lock and Dam down there near Paducah, which has been closed down. River levels very high there. Any reason to think that that'll be alleviated in some point in the near future?
Yeah, I actually think so. There's not that much volume of moisture in the pipeline right now, so as we go forward through these next couple of weeks, there should be an opportunity for that river flow to go down.
Then turn your attention to South America for me. What kind of conditions there?
Very good, I think, overall. Both Brazil and Argentina are either in good shape or will become that way as we go forward through the coming week to 10 days. For northern Brazil, of course, we're worried about Mato Grosso in particular, with the more erratic rainfall pattern and restricted soil moisture that's present across that particular state. We are going to see conditions improve there with rain coming up as we move forward through the next 3 or 4 days, and it should help tremendously improve the overall bottom line for planting and establishment. In the meantime, southern Brazil has been way too wet this year, or at least in the last few weeks, and we're going to see a nice period of drying come up from Friday of this week to Friday of next week, and that's really going to help the situation there as well. In Argentina, we have really good soil moisture in most locations except in the northwest part of the country, and that dryness there is probably going to prevail for a while. But we are going to go through a several-day period of warm and dry weather in the heart of corn and soybean country in Argentina. There'll probably be a few folks getting a little concerned about that, especially for Cordoba, which is already a little short on moisture, but that's the only province that will see a deterioration in crop conditions as we go forward through the 10 days coming up.
Thanks so much, and we appreciate you being with us for the day.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.